This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
Welcome to the Press Pass here on WKXL, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. For information, check out riverbendcmhc.org. In this segment of the show brought to you by the Loudoun Country Club, closer than you think, check out loudouncc.com for tee times. Absolutely love playing up at the Loudoun Country Club. So this, boys and girls, is a brand new endeavor here for me, and I am super excited about it. Is this going to bring more in-depth interviews, more behind-the-scenes conversations in regards to the sports world here to the program, here to the station? I am uniquely excited about this opportunity. We're going to start here with what was a very busy day on Sunday with the Patriots raising and unveiling their sixth championship banner. And the Red Sox, after a humbling defeat, 10-5 to the Yankees, in which they fell eight games out of the wild card, deciding to fire Dave Dombrowski in a very unceremonial-type fashion. We'll talk about that in this segment of the show. On the bright side of things for the Red Sox, it's been a fabulous year for Eduardo Rodriguez, who gets the ball here as we talk on Monday against the Yankees. He's got a shot at 20 wins this year. He has 17 wins on the season right now. And we'll talk with Eddie as well as Christian Vasquez about why Rodriguez has been so good this year. And also a little bit into Vasquez's philosophy about pitch calling, particularly in this new home run era. So that in just a moment. But we'll start with the Patriots, who opened defense of their Super Bowl championship by absolutely destroying the Pittsburgh Steelers in Foxborough, 33-3. Tom Brady, vintage Tom Brady, 341 yards, three touchdowns, and no turnovers in this contest. Philip Dorsett, who I've always liked as a Patriots receiver, was really good. He had two touchdowns. Also, Josh Gordon, one for the Patriots. The Patriots' defense was also phenomenal. They stopped the run, just 32 yards carrying the football for the Pittsburgh Steelers on 13 carries. It was an all-around dominant Patriots performance. And this, after they had announced the signing of Antonio Brown. And Brown's going to be watching this at home and saying, wow, I mean, 33-3, they beat my former team. I am going to have to adhere to the Patriots' way if this is going to work for me in New England. So it all works out. The Patriots are an absolutely tremendous football team going into this season, and this may be the best team that we have seen in New England. I'm calling it right now. It's maybe the best team we've seen in New England. Here is Tom Brady on the start of the season.
First game, it's good to start 1-0. You know, some guys made some big plays. I love how Phil played, Josh made plays, Jules did. I think the receiving group. So it was some good things to build on. You know, I think it was good we didn't turn the ball over. We were pretty penalty free for a while until the fourth quarter. Our defense played great. So it's a good formula for winning. Don't turn it over. Not a lot of penalties.
Devin McCourty talks about the defense and how deep and talented it is. That's a huge key to why the Patriots can be so good. Not just the depth at receiver, not just because Sony Michel, you know, might be the best running back the Patriots have had since Corey Dillon, and perhaps the best of this era. Not just because of the fact that James White is a unique weapon, and the offensive line, despite the loss of Dave Andrews, is so solid. The defense is why this team is so good, in my view. Here's McCourty.
I think it's a credit to all of the guys, you know, on defense. Everybody's earned the opportunity to be out there playing. And I think the coaches is doing a great job making sure everybody's fresh. It feels good to come out here, you know, open at night and have a lot of guys play for us defensively and a lot of guys play well.
Here's Patriots wide receiver Josh Gordon talking about his chemistry with Tom Brady.
We have spent a lot of time together, I would say so. I think over the course of time, you know, talking together, working together. After practice, in between practice, yeah, I mean, I get a feel for what he likes, and I try to find my way there as best as I can. I think it'll get better. It's the first game, so we're building.
Josh Gordon right there. As I referenced earlier, the Patriots surprised the NFL world, really, by bringing in Antonio Brown. And I am not going to condone his behavior in Oakland by any stretch of the imagination. And I think you have to be wary about taking a chance on Brown. But the Patriots have the type of organization that can absorb Brown, and where he is going to have to conform to the way that the Patriots do things. This is only a win situation for the Patriots. If it doesn't work out, Bill Belichick will cut bait. And I think it will work out. And again, this provides tremendous opportunity for Tom Brady to add even more depth to this offense. So I think it's a win for the Patriots. There's no question about that. And, you know, it's just the way the Patriots do things. It's a it's remarkable to watch this team continue on in this upwards trajectory after, you know, 19 years of Brady and Belichick. So we'll talk a lot about the Patriots, obviously, here on this show moving forward. I want to let you know this segment of the program is presented by Loudoun Country Club, and the Press Pass is brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health. We're going to switch gears to the Red Sox, and I was absolutely floored when I heard that the Red Sox had fired Dave Dombrowski after the game on Sunday night. It was the absolute wrong thing to do in this way. This man helped you win a World Series championship, and we can go through all the moves that we like and don't like, and this year there's been more moves that we haven't liked. And yes, the individuals the Red Sox are trotting out there to pitch on a day-in, day-out basis, not having depth in starting rotation. I understand the frustrations. But you have to honor the individuals that have done great things for you. And Dave Dombrowski was able to assemble a World Series championship team. He did so with, in my view, some really shrewd trades. I mean, he was able to bring in individuals to this team and not give away really any of the core individuals that would help them win a championship. He was able to orchestrate moves that allowed for them to defeat the Yankees, the Astros, and the Los Angeles Dodgers last year. And we have become so, you know, engulfed in championship success that I think we don't look at that all the time. And, you know, to let Dave Dombrowski go at the end of the year, I don't know if I would do that even, but that was the way to do it. I mean, make the decision now that every single decision is going to be, have to be approved by ownership, and Dombrowski can be able to stay on the job, and just treat him with some dignity and respect. I thought it was wrong the way the Red Sox handled that, and this season continues to really fall apart in front of us. Red Sox now 8 games out of the wild card. The Yankees are just so superior to them at this point in time. And it comes down to the starting pitching and the ineffectiveness of Rick Porcello, the injuries to Chris Sale and also David Price, and the injury earlier this year to Nathan Eovaldi. And they didn't have the depth in the starting rotation to allow for the team to continue to compete. The offense has been great. One of the best in baseball, if not the best in baseball. But outside of Eduardo Rodriguez, the starting pitching has just not been there for this team. Speaking of Eduardo Rodriguez, he has had a breakout season. 17 wins for Eduardo. He gets the ball tonight, and I talked with him about what this year has been like.
Joined by Eduardo Rodriguez, 17-game winner for the Boston Red Sox, has really come on late in the season with some of his best outings of the year, including the great outing against the Twins, 7 innings pitched, no runs, 5 hits over that frame. Great outing in San Diego as well. What have you put together? It's been a good, consistent year, but specifically, what have you put together over the last, you know, few starts to be where you are in your game?
You know, I think I've been working with the bullpen, in the bullpen every day. Every time I go to the bullpen with Dana, my training in the weight room. My preparation for the game, before the game, every game. I think that's what has been helped me a lot to be where I am right now.
Has it been more on the mental side than on the physical side? Because you talked about injuries, the roles they played for you in the past, but it seems like you have a consistent mindset and are attacking the strike zone.
I mean, that's part of the preparation. I mean, know the hitters, know what you want to do, know the pitch you want to throw, and that's what I think has got me where I am. Just thinking of what I'm gonna do with every hitter.
what has it meant to you, you know, in these last few starts where the team has needed you and each of the starters and each player to perform to the best of their ability because of the, how dire the situation is, and that you've put forth some of your best work?
Like I say, no matter what the results are the day before or the 3 days before, every time I go out there, I try to do my best. That's what I think.
Has it been any pitches this year that have been better or more effective for you? Has the fastball been better? Has the location been better? What has been the overriding theme, perhaps stuff-wise?
I would say the location. Location of my pitch. Throw with a purpose. Every time I throw a pitch, I throw with a purpose for the next pitch. You know what I mean?
20 wins is a possibility for you. Rick Porcello last did it for the Red Sox, so 22 in 16. What would that number mean to you?
I mean, it means a lot. You know what I mean? Win 20 games, I think, is something that every starting pitcher want to do. But right now, I'm just thinking I'll go out there and do my job and make it and give it a team to put that position to make the player.
Each year, there's been a lot of discussion about your potential and your stuff and who you could be. Did you hear a lot of the chatter about that potential and whether that potential was going to be met? Because you've always been, obviously, you're still young and you still have the best of your career probably ahead of you. But did that ever sift into you that people were talking about the fact that you might not meet your potential?
I mean, like I say, injuries has been my problem the last couple of years. This is the first year that I'm really healthy the whole year, so that's what I think has been the big change for me.
How much is game plan a factor for you versus just trusting your stuff? And obviously, the game plan is significant for each pitcher. But have you kind of taken some of the noise and put it to the side and kind of just focused on the fact that I have good stuff, I hit my spots, and that's going to have success?
I mean, that's what I just told you. The preparation is something a big team that I've been doing the last couple of starts and throws my staff. You know what I mean? If I throw my staff and execute the pitch, I think it's going to be a good result out of it.
Kyle, the Yankees start, your thoughts on that? You've obviously just shut down a really good Twins lineup. That's in the past. Their lineup is great as well. What's the focus like for you when you face a lineup like that versus another lineup?
I mean, for me, it's kind of every line that I face is the same for me. No matter who you're facing, they can hit the ball out. You know what I mean? The way the ball is carrying now, no matter who you face, if you make a mistake, the ball is going to be out of the ballpark or base hit. So for me, it's more matter like who I'm facing and execute the pitch.
You made a good point about home runs. How does that affect the mindset of a pitcher? Do you come to realize that with the way the ball is flying, you're going to give up home runs? And in other words, is it easier to kind of push it into the background if you give up a home run where you maybe would have dwelled on it a little bit more in the past?
I mean, the way the ball is carried now, you just got to execute the pitch. You got to throw the pitch right where you want it and then see if they can make a weak contact.
Great. Thanks, Eddie. You got it.
Eduardo Rodriguez right there. Let's talk with Christian Vasquez, who is the backstop for Eduardo Rodriguez and also the signal caller. And here is my conversation with Christian.
What have you seen from E-Rod this year, particularly the last couple starts that has allowed for him to really take that next step towards being an elite pitcher, something that we all kind of had a feeling he could do?
You know, he's throwing all his pitches nasty. You know, he's throwing his... You know, his changeup is getting better. You know, they're chasing a lot of high fastball, the hitters. You know, the cutter's good, so everything is good.
It seems like he's been more aggressive within the strike zone this year, where he's always had good stuff, but at times he's not always attacked the strike zone. Do you feel that's true this year? And what do you think was the difference in kind of getting him to believe in that stuff, that he can pound the strike zone with his stuff?
Yeah, it's attacking all the hitters, you know, no matter who is in the box. But, you know, I think beginning of the year he was walking a lot of people, but now he's a lot better. You know, his command is better. And, you know, I think that's helping to get deep in the game, like 7 innings, 8 innings. And, you know, is that going to help him to throw 200 innings, you know, a year, so...
Do you think this is just kind of the start for him and that there's more to come, or is this the type of season that you expect where he's going to be, you know, mid to upper threes, good innings, have a lot of wins because he's going to put his team in position to win, or can he get even better than this?
No, I think, you know, he looks so confident in the mound right now that, you know, we got a couple struggle outings that we get hit and, you know, a lot of runs. But now he's throwing shutouts, you know, one run, you know. And we can start the season next year like that and you know, stay like that. It's going to be awesome year. He can be, you know, fighting for Cy Young. So, you know, he got the ability to fight for that and be there.
How much do you want to get him to the 20 win marker?
That's a goal, you know, in between us, you know, him and myself, and you know, it's, that's a big goal for him. And throw 200 innings, that's a goal too. You know, we got 28 innings left to get 200 innings, so that's a big goal for him and myself. A
couple of questions on game calling and whether or not that's changed for you this year with the way the baseballs are flying out of the ballpark this year, where it seems like not just the Red Sox but other teams are a little more cautious to pound the strike zone and are a little bit more willing to give up walks as opposed to home runs. Is that something that you have, you know, put in this year, where there is a little bit more fear about you know, putting a pitch in the strike zone given the way that the balls are flying out of the ballpark?
Yeah, I think, you know, if we can walk a big guy that's gonna hurt us and get a ground ball low play next batter, you know, we're gonna do it. So, and you know, there's a lot of people that are chasing up right now that they have that angle swing up, and you know, they can hit it up in the zone. So, you know, they're swinging more up in the zone than down the zone right now.
So if you're facing a guy that's an elite hitter, you're going to be willing to, you know, make a 3-1 pitch to try to get him to chase. And if he doesn't, you know, if he swings right and get to the next guy. But that doesn't extend down the lineup, where if it's a hitter that you're not, don't have as much fear, you're still going to challenge them. So you're basically selective in that.
Exactly. It depends who's hitting, you know. If my Trout is hitting, we're going to pitch around, you know, the other walk, and, you know, we can fight with Otani or Pujols. You know, they have more holes than just a sample, you know.
Yeah.
They have more holes than Mike Trout.
So is that different than last year, where last year you would, like, let's say the Dodgers as an example, where if it's, you know, you see Bellinger a lot in the World Series, but it's a guy like that, it's a Bellinger, it's a Peterson, it's a Muncy, or a Turner, where you would challenge those guys in a similar count last year as opposed to walking them because of the ball flying out of the park, or would you do the same thing you're doing this year?
They had trouble with lefties, left-handed pitchers, so, you know, it's different, you know, it's, they don't.
Just mean in terms of the quality of hitter. Last year, would you challenge the quality hitters more often than this year?
Same okay. For me, yeah.
So the baseball doesn't change, the baseball and the way the ball's flying out of the park hasn't changed your game calling?
No, not really. I don't pay attention to that, you know. Okay. You need to hit it no matter what, you know, to hit it out of the ballpark. And you need to, you know, your swing, you need to be right to hit it. So I don't pay attention to that. You know, you need to execute the pitch, and no matter what.
This is the Press Pass here on KXL, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health, and this segment of the show brought to you by the Loudoun Country Club. When we return, we will take a look at the New York Yankees as well as the Minnesota Twins, two teams that are going to the playoffs and are at Fenway Park over this last week. And we'll start with a conversation with CC Sabathia, the legendary Yankee starter who went to Fenway Park for the last time this series. And a bit adieu last night, he received a number 52 from the Green Monster from David Price, his good friend. And we'll talk with CC Sabathia about his career when we return here on the Press Pass on KXL. This is the Press Pass here on KXL, a brand new show focused on taking you behind the scenes with some of the most in-depth interviews you'll find in sports, with particular focus on what's happening here in New England and in Boston. I am Chris Ryan, Press Pass presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health, and this segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. CC Sabathia has had an absolutely phenomenal big league career. He is a borderline Hall of Famer. There's no question in regards to that. And he has announced that this is going to be his last season. He's been injured and expected to be back for the Yankees in the rotation on Wednesday. So he did not get to pitch here at Fenway Park this past weekend and bid adieu in that fashion. But the Red Sox did honor him. They gave him a number 52 from the Green Monster scoreboard. David Price did the honors there. An opportunity to talk to CC Sabathia, who is a really classy guy, one of the nice guys in baseball, and have enjoyed talking with him over the years. He will finish his career with over 250 wins. He currently sits at 251 wins, and he's also a 3,000 strikeout guy for his career, as well as he currently has 3,082. I talked with him upon his last visit to Fenway Park.
Just curious as to what the mindset is for a guy that knows he's retiring at the end of the year as you come to places for, you know, the last time, and how do you try to kind of take everything in?
For us, every day we're trying to win a game, so, there's really no time to kind of do any, reflecting or anything like that. You know, I'll wait till after the season, hopefully, which is, winning a division and having a good playoffs, winning the World Series season. Think about, the last times and, my career.
Right, so you're not coming into Fenway taking, some dirt and all that with you, or are you, as you mentioned, the focus is obviously on the team, and that's probably changed in some ways. If you're way out of things, obviously it may be a little bit different, but will you come to Fenway and, take some dirt, walk around for the last time, or is it just focused on team stuff and that's how you're looking at it?
Yeah, it's just focused on team stuff, trying to win a ball game every day, trying to get healthy, trying to get back to, try to help us, down the stretch. So, we right here one step away from our goal, which is try to win a division, and, that's all I'm really kind of focused on right now.
It seems like really the only thing this year where you were, focused on the end was kind of the All-Star game, right? I mean, that mm-hmm. was just that one moment, because there hasn't really been any. So Jeter do his thing and Mariano mm-hmm. do his thing. Did you see that and say you want to do things differently, or how did you go about making a conscious decision of how you were going to, conclude things?
I didn't. I just, wanted to make the announcement during spring training, just kind of let the Yankees know, let everybody know. But I didn't have a vision of what I wanted it to be. Just a great season for us as a team. And it's been that so far. So, as far as, when I announced it, I knew I was going to retire in, September of last year.
Right.
I knew this year would be my last year. So I couldn't announce it at any time. So, but, it's been fun, just having a chance to win a championship, win a division, and be on a really good team the last year.
It seems like you've obviously have had fun. You've enjoyed the game for the last couple of years, but I remember with David Ortiz, there was that grind of a day in, day out basis where he was performing, and he was performing it as well as he ever had, but mm-hmm. the pain that went into it on a day in, day out basis. Is that how things kind of went for you, where the arm is still there and you could probably still do it, but the process of getting ready and such and being ready for each start was just too much?
Yeah, that, the knee pain, and the travel, being away from home,
mm-hmm.
So I've been doing this for a long time, so just being able to, travel when I want, have a summer vacation, be with my family, do different things, I think it's time for that. I think it's just time for the next phase of my life, so. I'm excited for that.
You've had a phenomenal career, 250 plus wins, 3,000 plus strikeouts, Hall of Fame may be on the docket, but it seems to me that your biggest thing has always been being a good teammate, and that's been, first and foremost more than anything else. Was that something that you've always had throughout the course of your life? Were there particular individuals that treated you a certain way, which then, you kind of passed it along in that type of way, pay it forward?
I think it was the Cleveland Indians organization. When I got there, out of high school, my high school coach was really, preached about being a good teammate and all that stuff, but you're so young, you really don't catch on to any of that stuff. A few things, but getting in the Indians organization and seeing the way they veterans treated people and the way they as an organization treated us players, that's what they preached,
mm-hmm.
Being a good teammate, before being a good player. So, that's something that just kind of stuck, and it's been fun. You meet all different kind of people, you know, you become friends with different people, and some of my lifelong friends became, you know, friendships came out of baseball, and it's only because of, you know, trying to be a good teammate and understand, you know, where people come from and you know, the different sides of them outside of the field.
Your fortitude as well, whether it's, you know, in your personal life or whether it's in the way that you've evolved as a pitcher, where initially you were able to dominate 98 mile an hour fastball on that 2009 team and obviously prior to that and great stuff. And how much pride do you take in the latter portion of your career where the numbers are not obviously the same, but you've had to go through so much in order to A, get out there, and B, you know, change how you work in order to be effective? So in some ways, despite the early portion of your career being, you know, from a statistical standpoint more dominant, is there more pride in the latter portion of the career of what you've had to go through?
Yeah, it's been a lot more fun, you know, getting out this way. You know, I owe a lot to, you know, Andy Pettit, Mo, you know, Larry Rothschild, you know, Mike Harkey, you know, those guys worked me a lot, you know, to, you know, kind of help me make this transformation and just a lot of stages of my career, you know, with the cutter, two-seamer, throwing a changeup a lot. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun, you know, kind of getting outs a different way. It's a lot more work, but, yeah, I mean, it's kept me around and, you know, put 4 or 5 more years in my career.
That is CeCe Sabathia right there. The Minnesota Twins are an up-and-coming club. I don't know if they're going to have the pitching to compete in the postseason with the Astros and really even the Yankees, but they have a lineup that is extremely formidable, and that includes their leadoff hitter, Max Kepler, who is amongst the league leaders in home runs this year.
Twins have been, without question, one of the best stories in baseball this year. And why has this team had the success that you guys have had? And what kind of environment has been created here to allow for the success?
You know, people just understand each other and get along well. I'd say they're gelling, building relationships, just enjoying the journey of, you know, a baseball career. And, yeah, having fun is the main part, I think, the main factor to success, and not really dwelling on a result that was, you know, a game before or a game ahead of us, just staying in the present, really.
How much do you feel that, you know, that environment is important to a team's success? Because some folks will say, well, winning's going to breed that type of environment anyway. If the team has success, then things are going to go well. People are going to enjoy being around one another. Does that foundation come before winning, in your view?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on all kinds of teams, teams that lost a lot, teams that won a lot. But yeah, I think you learn from adversity.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I learn, when I'm being successful and just having fun. But you don't really learn much from success. Success is more of a result of what you learn from, you know, getting out of some adversity. So yeah, the more adversity you go through in any situation, I think, makes a person grow, makes a team grow. But yeah, this is the most success I've had at this level, and it's my 4th season, so I don't know if it's just our time, but I've been through my fair share of adversity, and I expect more to come. It just comes with this game. But yeah, to answer your question, yeah, it takes hard work to get where we're at right now.
Nelson was talking about the fact that the core of this group had been together and that he's enjoying baseball so much this year because of the fact that the young players have been together for a period of time. And you saw, you know, the Red Sox do something similar with their group coming up. The Toronto Blue Jays trying to do the same thing now as well. How much of an advantage do you think that is to you knowing these guys and coming through and spending a lot of time together?
It helps add to just people being comfortable around each other. So, yeah, it helps. The more comfortable you are, the more you can relate to, you know, your teammates and openly and freely speak about, you know, what went down and, you know, in the game or if it's off the field, the more you guys will play for each other. And I feel like when you play for your teammates, stuff comes easier because it helps you, it takes the focus off you and your individual needs of performing a certain way. So, but you know, everyone goes through phases. I do too. I tend to focus internally in the game, and then I switch and focus on my team, and then the game comes much funner. So I just try to remind myself of that. Yeah, definitely. And I think in any profession, you know, if you're happy with the people you're around, you're going to be happier in general.
You've emerged as one of the best power hitters in the game this year, and you've talked about how, you know, the adversity that you faced through the course of your career has led you to the success that you have now. What adversity do you think has led to, you know, this breakout season for you?
I mean, you can do everything right in the game of baseball and still not get rewarded. You can hit a ball in the screws right at someone. You know, pitcher can throw his perfect pitch and they can still hit it. So there's adversity at all times. Mm-hmm. Even in a fun year like this year, everyone has dealt with adversity. Yeah, but I think just getting to be in this game for as long as I've had so far, I'm starting to learn how to deal with it better than I used to. I used to be really stubborn with it, and now I just accept it, you know, and try and learn from what happened, acknowledge it shortly after it happened, and then put it behind me so I can give it my best performance the next day. So it's one of the hardest games, I think, you know, mentally. A lot of people don't understand how mental this game can be.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at the 36 home runs this year and you're likely to double your previous high, and people ask you about, oh, what's different in terms of your approach, or what have you changed with your swing, or how are you dreading more power? But it's probably the mental side of things, correct? Either pitch identification or just how you're able to process and free your mind, correct?
I think it's me personally just giving myself the best shot to perform, at the next available moment. So if I have a tough day yesterday, I don't dwell on it, and come back to the field the next day with more energy, or not, let's not say more, but the same. Just stay even keel and ride it out the whole season. Stick with what you believe in, your mentalities. Doubt will try and creep in and stuff like it always does, but with time you learn to, you know, just believe in what you believe and put that to play, and it works.
The last couple of years when you've come in, you've stood out here at Fenway in terms of your fielding and your ability to run down baseballs and make plays. How much has that helped you too through the course of your career to have, you know, that to go back to no matter what?
I mean, defense is something that has to stick for me in my game. It's always been like, you know, if you're not getting hits, which I'm not, I haven't really been the guy who gets hits every game. I tell myself, you know, if you're not getting hits, you have to take hits away. So you can't half-ass defense in my point of view. You have to always give it your best shot, so that's why I play like that. But, yeah, I can see how the game's become more of an offensive game, you know, with all the power numbers, and people forget about defense.
Sweet. Thanks, Max. Appreciate it. Okay.
That is Max Kepler, who's third in the American League right now with 36 home runs. This is the Press Pass here on KXL, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health, and this segment of the program has been brought to you by Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. When we return, we're seeing more and more openers and relievers taking on more prominent roles in baseball. Is this just a fad, or is this a trend that's going to continue? We talk about that with Hall of Famer Burt Blyleven, as well as Yankees standout reliever Zach Britton. And we return on the Press Pass on KXL. This is the Press Pass here on KXL, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health, and this segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. For more information, visit prescription-center.com. Last year, when the Rays started using an opener, it was widely greeted with a lot of apprehension and dismissal. But now we're seeing more and more teams use openers and relievers in more prominent roles. Is this the way baseball is headed? I had conversations with two prominent pitchers, one a Hall of Famer in Burt Blyleven, the other one of the best relievers in baseball in Zach Britton, about exactly that topic. We'll start with Burt Blyleven.
There was a feeling last year that the opener was just kind of a fad. The Rays were using it as a result of resources, and it wouldn't last. But we've seen, obviously, the Yankees use it extensively this year. The Red Sox have used it extensively amongst other teams. Do you feel that that's the direction that baseball is heading? Is it sustainable?
I think it shows a lack of quality pitching as far as starters, if anything. You have your primary, whoever comes in after the opener, if that's what you want to call them. There's been other, terminologies for that second pitcher. But, to me, it wears down the bullpen because it's a bullpen day, basically. So the starter the next day, like Barrios tonight, hopefully he'll go deep into the ball game and not, you know, what we used, five relievers yesterday, you know. So it kind of puts a little more burden on the bullpen, but there are now, especially in September. But I know that when the Rays did it, they did it during the regular season. So, you know, you had one or two guys that were long men in the bullpen, and those are the guys they expected to come in second.
There's a feeling that once a starter faces a lineup a third time, that that becomes extremely problematic for them, and even a second time. And as a result of that, it's better to have fresh pitchers because of the success that teams feel they have in the late innings, in seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. So do you feel it's as a result of lack of quality starting pitching, or is it a overall philosophy that has shifted away from where it should be? Or where do you feel that why is it trending this way?
I wish I had the answer, but I would have to say my guess would be sometimes that starter maybe doesn't remember how he got the guy out or what he hit against him in the first at-bat, and then how he did the second at-bat, and then if you face him for the third time, what was your first two at-bats? What's working for you that day against that individual to get him out? But it's such a, you know, numbers game today that you have all the analytic people saying, basically, in their mind, you can't face the lineup for the third time. Well, that's a big negative to me. Someone that completed a lot of games like myself, I never thought about if I'm going to face. I face guys sometimes the fifth time, you know. And you go out there and you think, okay, well, you got a base hit on a fastball away, you know, and you say, okay, I got to change my routine, how I pitch them. So you got to make the adjustment. Is the adjustment being made out there as much now because a lot of guys don't shake off anymore? You know, it's catcher has a game plan and you got to stick to it. So that may not be for the best for that individual on the mound at that time.
How much do you think it has to do with how starters are pitching today, where they may have better quote-unquote stuff, they may throw harder, they may have better breaking pitches and so forth than guys of your era, but the guys of your era knew how to pitch and had, you know, three or four pitches that they'd use, move inside, outside, up and down. And do you think that that's a factor where guys are easy to hit against despite the fact that they have better stuff because they don't pitch the way they used to?
Well, you know what, you go about it, you go out there on that mound with a baseball in your hand, and you know, if you made a bad mistake, it's your fault. That's the way I looked at it. If I lost, I lost. My team didn't lose, I lost. You try to keep your club in the game the best you can. You try to make adjustments to the stuff you have that day. We're not computerized. One day I'm going to have a better curveball than another day. But to me, everything keyed off my fastball.
Yeah.
I had to be able to hit my spots with my fastball. That's the only pitch I ever wanted coming out of the bullpen to start a ball game, was control of my fastball down and away, and also to a right-hander and down and away to a left-hander. That was it. I had time during a ball game to work on my other pitches.
Final thing, should stats of this era be judged differently than other eras? And some people say every era should be judged differently. You can't say, you know, a player of this era, how they would do in another era, and so on and so forth. But when you look at the amount of home runs your team is going to hit the most ever this year, you'll get Chris Sale's strikeout numbers, fastest to get to, you know, to get to record. And that is seems to be the trend of baseball at this point, home runs and strikeouts. So you have to judge it differently in this era?
You know, I never minded. I think when I was very young, if I lost 1-0, it was my fault. If I lost 2-1, it was my fault. You know, I wanted to go 9 every time out. So I didn't really worry about stats. I tried to more concentrate on, and we pitch every fourth day too.
Yeah.
I think sometimes these kids are almost too strong. They go out there, and first three innings are so important for any starting pitcher, and you got to put some zeros up. You know, no crooked numbers in the first three innings. Keep your club in the game, and hopefully they'll score you the runs they need.
So you didn't try to get, despite being a prolific strikeout pitcher, you did not try to get strikeouts per se?
No, I mean, especially later in my career, if I could get, you know, three outs on three pitches, fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But strikeouts were a big part of my game when I needed it, but I didn't go out there like Nolan Ryan and try to strike out the world or Randy Johnson. You know, just they happened, and if there's a runner at third and one out, yeah, I want a strikeout. I need to get a strikeout here. To go into a ball game saying I think I threw 15 strikeouts in a game a couple times, but that was like something I didn't mean to do. They just missed it. It wasn't my fault.
Cool. Thanks.
All right, you're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Bert Blyleven right there, Twins announcer and Hall of Famer. Here's my conversation with Yankee standout reliever Zach Britton.
Zach, the Red Sox are using an opener today, and we've seen the Yankees use an opener. Last year when Tampa did, it was widely considered as being something that's just kind of an aberration. It seems like the game is moving in that direction. You'll get the strength of this bullpen as well and many other bullpens. Do you feel like it's just becoming a more reliever-dominated game and it's heading in that way?
Well, I guess the numbers this year actually wouldn't tell you. The relievers' ERAs aren't very good over across the game. So I don't think it's a strategy that's going to be around that long. You need good starters. All the teams that have won, I think the World Series, for the most part, had good enough rotation to do it. So, I think there's a time and place for it, but I don't think it's going to be the new norm.
A lot of people around the game feel that it's as a result of the lack of quality starting pitching that is the reason for, you know, what the way these teams have gone, injuries and so forth. Do you feel it's that way as well, particularly given the fact that the relievers haven't necessarily been all that successful in these roles?
Maybe a little bit. I think a lot of it's financial. A fourth, fifth starter is way more expensive than a one-inning reliever, so I think a lot of it has to do with that. And you can send up, you know, openers up and down a lot easier, things like that. Teams that have optionable rosters. But like I said, I think the game's kind of, it's starting to turn around. Like the reliever ERA this year is, I think, worse than starter ERA.
Mm-hmm.
So just goes to show you that good starters are valuable. And guys that can give you innings, really. Are valuable.
Yeah, that was going to get to that point as well, the financial side, where it seems like the fourth or fifth starter, or you're bringing up a young starter, that is not being utilized to the extent that it was before. And is that a concern, as you guys head to the CBA, that the fourth or fifth starter, the closer as well, it seems to not have the value that it once did to organizations?
Yeah, you know, I think, like, if you're talking about bullpen roles, the closer role, I think I don't think that's necessarily going away. I think it's more so that people realize that you got to get to a closer.
Right.
You know, now I've closed before. Now I'm setting up. I think I was way more appreciated. Now I'm more appreciative to the setup guys and how hard that gig is. You know, than maybe I was in the past when I was closing.
How so?
I think, like, watching, like, how often a guy like Ottavino faced the heart of the order. Pretty much every outing is as a closer. It's kind of like whenever the run in your lineup comes, that's when you pitch. You know, you could have the bottom of the order five saves in a row, and, you know, a guy like Ottavino or whatever is getting the heart of the lineup because they're able to mix and match when they enter him into the game. And in your closer, you kind of just, like I said, you go with the game flow, right? Wherever the lineup hits when it's a safe situation is when you enter the game. And so that's been one of the biggest things. I think teams find value in that. They know that there's value in setup guys doing that. So, but at the end of the day, like, you're going to have to pay starters. I think you're going to see the game kind of go back to finding good enough starters because through the course of a season, how long it is. Not too many people can do the things that we're doing out of the pen because the Yankees were willing to go and pay relievers. And so we have such good depth, but a lot of teams can't do that.
So what the Red Sox tried to do this year, and you're well aware of this, obviously, is Matt Barnes was going to be the guy that was going to face, you know, the heart of the lineup in the last couple innings. And Alex kind of gave up on that over the last few weeks and said it wasn't fair and that no pitcher can handle that workload going up against the heart of the lineup each time and not have it kind of be debilitating mentally where you're going to get hit. And the ERA is not going to be what it should, but you can do an exceptional job, and still the numbers aren't going to be there.
Yeah.
Do you feel that's true, and how difficult is it, you know, if you had to each night go out and face, as you mentioned with Ottavino, the heart of the lineup every night and kind of take one for the team, so to speak, in terms of your numbers?
Yeah, I think that's, like I said, the value, I think, is almost in, to an extent, is the setup guys and not necessarily the closers anymore, because you can implement a setup guy in any high leverage situation, want the heart of the lineup, whereas the closer, like I said, the lineup kind of just falls to wherever it falls. And I think it's extremely difficult. If you're facing, you know, Mookie Betts, Bogarts, and J.D. Martinez every time you enter the game, obviously, eventually, those guys are going to get you at some point.
Three out of four times really in good. A series, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas if you only face maybe each one of those is twice a year.
Right.
There's a huge difference. And, I'm not, like, naive to see. Like, I look back on some of the saves I had, situations I come in. Like, Darren O'Day, who was a setup guy for me in Baltimore, was facing the heart of, for a week stretch. Right. He was facing the heart of the lineup. I was getting the back end of the lineup. So, and there's times now where I'm facing guys that they want me to face you know, hard lineup. They're big lefties, they're big righties, things like that that I've had success over. But I'm facing those guys more often than I would had I ever, like, if I was still closing. So, like I said, it just takes, like, the Yankees were invested in it and they wanted to do that in the pen, but a lot of teams can't do that. So that's where the starters come into play.
Final thing, and obviously postseason and regular season are completely different. And, you know, we're talking about the regular season here. But postseason, you know, so the Red Sox did last year with the starters coming in pitching the eighth inning. You guys are going to probably have starters go four or five innings and then they'll stretch out to the bullpen, which is a phenomenal bullpen. Is that the way you think postseason is going to be played, and teams are trying to use postseason strategy in their regular season that hasn't been successful?
Yeah, again, the season's too long to do it. You're going to see lack of performance. The Rays, I mean, you watch like Castillo and Alvarado, like they were dominating at the beginning of the year, and now they've struggled.
Right.
You know, they got burnt out early. Yeah. And those are two really, really good arms, if not some of the best arms in the game. And you see what happened to them by doing that strategy. Whereas, like I said, we've been fortunate to stay healthy the way they've used us now 3 days in a row, acquiring guys free agents from free agency, and then having a guy like, you know, like Chad Green. That's a luxury item to be able to start him and use him in opener role. Most teams can't afford the luxury of a guy with that stuff opening a game, but we can just based on the fact that they were willing to go on free agency and you know, get guys, and obviously had talent here too, and we're still missing Betances.
Right. Cool. Yeah. Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it. That's very good.
You've been listening to the debut edition of the Press Pass here on KXL, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us for the program.